Welcome back to another episode of Podvisor, sponsored by... Oh, no, we're not actually sponsored by anything.
Nobody. Sponsored by ourselves.
By good energy. Well, welcome back once again. David, joined by my esteemed colleague, Andrew. Andrew, how you doing today?
Well, I'm doing, as I said when I got into the studio this morning, it's my Monday, even though it's a Tuesday. So that's how I'm feeling.
It's a day. So what are we looking at today? What's the adventure we're going on?
Well, here at SUNY Oswego, we have, you know, crossed the threshold of the midterm grade season. So students could be dealing with some hopefully positive feedback, but also, you know, negative feedback on how their semester has been going in the classroom. But that also leads us to registration time. So those two things together, we're going to be talking a little bit about the post-midterm grade season, as well as registration, preparing for the next semester, what steps you should have already taken at this point, what you might still need to do, and what you should do when you run into trouble, like, hey, I only got registered for 2 out of the 5 classes I was hoping to get into. So, and I'm sure along the way, as always, we'll dabble in other things that, you know, come
ramble,
up.
Ramble, meander, yes. Take detours here, wherever we might.
Indeed.
Well, maybe we should start with the midterms, because that chronologically was the thing that happened a little bit earlier on. So what is it now? Maybe a week and a half ago, I think 2 Fridays ago, midterm grades came out. And this is a great chance for students to get feedback on where they're at. And one of the things I always tell my students is that midterm grades are just a check-in in time, a moment of where you're at, and grades can go up still with hard work and dedication. Grades can go down. But the important thing is to take the information you get from those midterm grades and then do something with it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I use this. It's an indicator for us to take action. And that action is never sit back and relax, but it's going to be, well, you're doing good in your classes. Great. Double down on all the good habits that you've formed. And now it's time to cease any of those lingering bad habits, that procrastination on that paper that's coming due. You're doing fine in the class now, but don't put it off knowing that if you wait until the last minute, you might not get it turned in on time and it's not going to, you know, be the best product it could have been with, you know, working much prior to the deadline to get it done.
Definitely. And, you know, for a lot of brand new students, this can be a little bit of a shock moment. Now, hopefully it's a good moment, like, oh, wow, I'm doing really good. I'm having positive habits and things are going well. But if this is also the first time that maybe you're seeing your grades, maybe you haven't been tracking things, you're in that college environment for the first time, you don't quite know how to track grades on your own or how things are added up, seeing, oh, I have a C, that's a lot lower than I expected. And if it kind of hits you from out of nowhere, it really depends on how you respond to that in that moment. And it can either be, oh, no, I'm not doing well. Quick, I'm going to run to my advisor and I need to withdraw from the class. Or it can be, yes, let's do something with it. I'm going to stop procrastinating. I'm going to check out learning services and use tutoring right here on the first floor of Penfield Library. I'm going to go to office hours for the first time. And I always tell my students, you know, even if it's midway through the semester, it's never a bad idea to still go and introduce yourself to your instructor for the first time again. Hey, I've been in the class. I know maybe you haven't seen me a ton. I haven't talked a lot, but, you know, I really want to do my very, very best. And your instructors want to support you and want to assist you there. One of the things I actually saw this year as well that I actually really liked, and I don't know if they did this last year, but I saw that the registrar's office actually sent out notices to students who had a C- grade or mm-hmm. lower in all classes. And if you got that message, again, don't use it as a moment of panic, but use that as, I am going to take action. I'm going to ask questions as well.
Yeah, it just gives you an opportunity to see where you're at, because we don't have on this campus, and, you know, if you're listening from as a student from a different university across the country or globe, your campus might have a policy in place such that, you know, faculty have to submit grades by a certain time. We're not one of those campuses. So some faculty could wait, in theory, till the very end of the semester to provide feedback to you. So that midterm grade is an opportunity, a snapshot of how you're doing at the moment, so that way we can intervene and know the fact that if it's a midterm grade, that means the middle of the term. So only half of the semester has transpired. There is another half of the semester to go. So there's a possibility you could turn things around. Will it involve changing your behavior? Will it involve maybe locking in a little bit more than you had already previously done so in some of the classes? Perhaps. It could also mean it might be assigned to withdraw from the class as well. And that is not necessarily a bad thing. It's going to help preserve your GPA. It's not without consequence. It's not going to negatively affect your GPA in the same way that a failing grade would, but there are things like financial aid, long-term graduation, academic standing that are definitely worth talking about with your advisor. But knowing that ultimately that might be the best thing for you to do if we're at the halfway point and you're failing a class and there's no way for you to recover. And some faculty, like if you go talk to them about, they'll say like, yeah, it's just mathematically impossible for you to pass at this point. And sometimes that's just the nature of higher education and college level classes. I think we've talked about this previously, but you know, you've got a typical high school student coming to college used to 180 instructional days. Well, guess what? In some of your classes, you got 45 of them throughout the semester to cover the same amount of content. So if you struggled and it's your first semester in college, that could be one of the reasons why. And so that midterm grade is a good indicator of going forward. Where should I be at this point in the semester to reach my goals, to feel good about the things that I've done so far? And so that midterm grade is that check-in point again to see how things are going for you.
Yeah, if it's a once-a-week class, then, you know, you only meet 15 times during the semester potentially as well, or 14, whatever the exact math is on it there. But it's all about being informed, right? So those midterm grades are to help you to be informed. It's a good thing to even consider first, well, what does a midterm grade mean, right? For some students, I've heard from them, it says, well, we didn't take a midterm in our class. What do you mean? And it may be the grade of a midterm. That could be something if the faculty member or your instructor has decided that, or it could be the cumulative average up to that point. So it's important to ask the instructor what goes into that. Andrew, one of the things that I did in a class that I teach was that shortly before midterm grades were posted, I had loaded them already, but they weren't publicly visible yet. I took a moment at the start of class to say, hey, everyone, you're going to get your grades. This is everything that went into it. You know, don't panic or worry if your grade's a little on the lower end. Here's all the points still remaining as well. And then I invited them to talk to me. You know, come and have a conversation. If you don't understand why your grade is where it is, I'm happy to explain things. If you think maybe I graded something wrong or you turned something in and you don't see it reflected yet, right? Let's have a conversation about that as well. So it's being informed. And then, Andrew, I love how you said, you know, for some students, you might have a low grade and maybe mathematically you can't pass the course at this point. So that's an important distinction, that because your grade is at a D or an E, that doesn't automatically mean you're going to fail, but it doesn't also automatically mean you do still have that pathway to still getting to the grade that you need as well. So having those conversations and being informed. In a lot of situations, if students look at the syllabus, right, that might give you at least a good indication of where that point tally is up to that point and what's still out there. So it's important to look at those things. And if you don't understand something, talk to your instructor. We hope you're comfortable doing that. If not, even bring a syllabus to an advisor. And we can't necessarily guarantee we're going to be able to decipher the whole thing, but we might be able to at least make kind of an informed assessment of it working, you know, within this realm. But it also then calls upon you as a student to say, okay, well, what did you get on quiz one? What did you get on quiz two? And if you don't have those tallied or recorded, then it's hard to make that assessment and judgment. So it's all about being informed and making decisions. And this will lead into then that concept of registration that we're going to talk about as well. Because if you're getting ready to withdraw from a class or to decide, you know, am I going on to the next level in a course, that'll directly impact what you want to sign up for. So all these things are playing in together. So first come the midterm grades, right? You assess where you're at, what kind of progress you're making. Hopefully you're going to keep working hard. And then we move into registration, which is always an exciting time, Andrew. I love when we get to registration. It's busy in our office, but it's like busy with like optimism and enthusiasm.
It's one of my favorite parts about being an advisor is as a student, you know, builds their schedule and sees their courses. For me, at least, and every advisor does things a little bit differently in our office. But when it comes to the registration process, I really embrace Nakata's advising as teaching. I don't want to just have a list of classes that I, you know, hand to the student and say, here are the classes that you need to register for. I'm looking to see, do they understand their degree audit and know which classes they need to take? Why do they need to take those classes? What are the different requirements of a student from their general education to their major, even within the major, the difference between the core requirements, cognates, electives, all those things? I want them to know this information so that when they're in a situation where they're waiting to hear back from their advisor because they have a question, It's not, or hopefully it's not going to be something transactional. Like, I need this information in order to move on to the next step. More so, it's information that's going to help them, you know, think about career options post-college or things related to internships or experiences that they can have. How is that going to guide them? So to teach them these skills and the information that they need to know in order to register, that's what I like to do in my registration appointments. And so when I see that light bulb go off, which the light bulb moment, I think, is one of the best parts of being an advisor, when they get it and they're like, ah, yes, I understand this now. And I just see them clicking away and adding the courses. For me personally, it's a very rewarding experience, but also for the student, because they get to take ownership. I think that's something that's come up already this semester in having conversations about registration. Now, back in high school, you just kind of got your schedule. Maybe you had some,
a little bit of choice. Yeah. Maybe a guidance counselor says, well, do you want a study hall or do you want to do this elective? Do you want to come in a little bit later or do you want to leave a little earlier? But yeah, you're right. A lot of times it was just, you know, whatever the state curriculum is, and you might have one or two choices, depending on your high school too. You know, different schools had different resources and different opportunities.
But yeah, now you get to choose your path. And if you have a less prescriptive program, which is the programs that I advise, they've, you know, only got roughly 40 credit hours in each of their majors, and you need 120 credits to graduate. 30 of those credits are going to be gen ed courses. So then that leaves you with approximately 40% of your credit hours coming from someplace else. And so that gives you the flexibility and freedom, but that often leads to things like choice paralysis. I don't know what to choose. So let's then have a conversation about what interests you. That's, I think, a more exciting conversation than, all right, here are the five classes I think you should take. Take my word for it. Don't have any input on the matter, student, even though you're the one who's stuck with the debt, who has to get through these classes and feel like it's going to, you know, provide meaning to you in addition to just checking off a box. So even though the process of registration is very much a transactional element of being an academic advisor, there's still a lot more you can do with it, and that's part of the thing that gives me the joy to do the job.
Well, it's an exciting opportunity when you dive into those electives or those general education courses, and this is a chance to explore something brand new, to learn a skill, to learn new information in some way. I always love when I'm talking about the foreign language requirement and students realize, oh, I can take sign language? Like, that's really cool. I've always wanted to learn that. Or, you know, I use this, you know, sometimes as a joke, but it actually is exciting that students realize that we have a scuba diving class and they're like, oh, I can take that. I can gain skills in that. Or they want to develop EMT skills, right? And we have our course aligned with SAVAC. So it's a chance to explore and dive in. Yeah, we could probably do a whole episode on this, but I want to maybe take just a second to talk about when someone is looking at their information, right? They're looking at degree works. That's part of what we're talking about right now. That there's a lot of different categories that go into that, right? And we could easily devote a whole episode to each of these categories. But you have your general education courses, right? So broad knowledge classes. Everyone dabbles in a little bit of those across a bunch of different subjects. You'll work with your advisor to identify what categories you still need to complete, but then you're going to see all your options and you get to pick and choose. What do you like? What do you not like? What times of the days work? What modalities? How many times do you meet? Can you strategically overlap it with your major, or does it make sense to actually separate it from your major for the sake of credit? So you have your gen eds, you have your major, that primary thing you're studying. Within that, you have maybe those elective elements as well, where you're going to specialize, you find your niche, your area. Andrew, you said how you have a more open major with less credits to go into it. Some of my majors are more prescriptive, right? 70, 80 credits, almost, you know, going past 90 in some instances. And there, it might be a very set list of courses. And those particular electives you take might be very determinative into the skills, the specialties you're gaining for your future career in your field. And I'll say to students when I meet with them, you know, this is your chance to find what your passion is, what you're really excited about. Talk to your faculty advisor. Talk to the professor teaching those courses and engage with how that's going to help you. You have your choices for a minor, right, which might be a chance to, again, explore something a little more, maybe amplify your major or add on to a second skill set. You have broad electives, things that maybe you've already completed in different places as well, just to get you up to your total 120, 123 credits, or again, because you're excited to take something. And then the last thing that I think is important to at least mention is that for some students, as you're completing your degree requirements, we're stepping a little bit outside of registration here in a way, But you might even look in the future during the summer, during the winter, or if you want to get real, real advanced for a future episode during a standard semester, at taking transfer credit. And maybe that makes sense because you want to space courses out. Maybe you're falling behind a bit and you need to catch up. Or maybe you just want to keep your learning brain on. Sometimes I say to the students during the winter, and you want to keep taking a class. You want to take that language class. You want to take that math course at a local community college or another school. So very broadly, you know, the registration time is exciting because you're diving into courses. You're taking ownership of your education, like you said. And it really commits to you becoming your best self and self-defining your educational experience, which is so cool.
And again, radically different than probably the experience of a traditional first year, you know, student from high school. So, you know, I think as we head into registration right around the corner, you know, what are some tips and tricks students should be thinking about as they prepare for this? Like, what is the process? You know, is it every advisor does things a little bit differently, but, you know, what is the general process of preparing for registration here at SUNY Oswego?
Yeah, good question. So to answer kind of what you first asked, every advisor does do it a little differently, but there's broad strokes that we kind of adhere to overall, right? So first and foremost, everyone has hopefully seen that, you know, My Oswego has updated. And if you're listening to this from another institution, I never even think that maybe we have listeners elsewhere, but that's kind of cool to think about, you know, checking on whatever your portals or your institutional pages are. The very first step at this point is check your registration time. To me, that's the first step because it gives you a sense of, okay, when can you register? The first year students who I work with, who are my primary advisees, my primary caseload, you know, I let them know that our process generally goes that when registration begins, our most advanced standing students are going to go first. So our seniors and grads, it rolls throughout the week. And we're talking in generalities right now. There are some groups, some cohorts that have earlier times for various reasons. But by the time it gets to you, you want to make sure you know exactly when and where you can register so that you're ready to go in front of that computer. And I always carve out the caveat of that, you know, I don't want you skipping class. I don't want you, you know, pulling the computer out in the middle of class that all of a sudden, you know, you're getting yelled at. And you said, well, my advisor said I had to register this time. No, I'm not taking that blame. But otherwise, be ready to register at your time. So know when that is, because that's going to give you your best window and opportunity to get what you want. You want to be informed. You want to check your hold, right? Is there maybe a bill you haven't paid? At the start of the semester, did you maybe party a little too hard and you got a little conduct trouble and you still have to take that class or that workshop or write that paper? So check your hold. Make sure nothing is outstanding. And if there is something that is listed right now, you'll usually be able to identify pretty readily which office you have to correspond with or who can help you with that. And if you're not sure, talk to your advisor and they can help you identify who that is as well. You want to make sure you have your PIN number, right? So for brand new first-year students and then for, again, other cohorts along the way for our students who are about halfway through, biggest group is brand new first-year students. You might need a PIN, just like at an ATM, a code that you're going to use when you register for courses. And that is something you will get from your advisor. And I think this is intentional. It's a check-in point to make sure that we have those conversations, like we can be well-informed. And it is, at least from my perspective, a chance to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that you're not going in completely unaware of what you're supposed to take. You sign up for the wrong courses with good intentions, but the wrong courses, and then that does set you back. But you get your PIN, and then through that process, you are meeting with your advisor. You're reviewing progress, checking midterm grade, looking at the courses that you need to take so that you can then make, or even if you're proactive, already made a registration plan. And that plan is where you can draft out what classes you want to take. You can search for things that you're interested in. You can lay out what's going to be in what order so that on registration day, you click that button. I want to use this plan. I want to attempt to register. Fingers crossed. We didn't make any mistakes. We didn't try to add a course that we're not eligible to take as well. And you'll get a nice green pop-up window that says successfully submitted. And boom, you're ready for the spring semester. And then the last step is don't look too far ahead right away, that you're still finishing strong with this semester. So there's a lot goes into it, but, you know, be informed. Again, I said that a couple of times, but be informed, know your holds, know your time, talk to your advisor for your classes, get that PIN, and then register. So maybe almost like a 1-2-3-step process.
And I follow basically that same structure, you know, communicated out to my own advisees. But with all of that said, David, I'm going to tell our audience, do not delay this process.
Yes,
and I'm
yes.
really glad that you mentioned, you know, if your registration time is, let's say, November 7th at 11 a.m. and
common time,
you know, you're in the middle of a class at that point. Yeah, you're not skipping class to register. It kind of defeats the whole purpose of you being here, right? That being said, you want to get registered as soon as you can. So do not delay any of these steps, especially when it comes to getting that PIN at the start, because that's what unlocks your ability to register. But then even registration itself, I've had students who have done everything that they were supposed to. And then like a week or two after advanced registration, you know, has started, I'll look at my list of students who haven't registered yet. I'll see a student with zero credits. I'll reach out. Oh, hey, you know, so-and-so, why didn't you register for classes? I've been busy. I'm going to get to it. I feel you. I believe you've been busy. But this is one of those tasks that you just have to prioritize. One of the, you know, objectives of a college student is to do well in the classes, but also prepare for the following term each semester. And if you delay that process, not only does that potentially affect your ability to graduate on time because seats could fill up in certain classes that you really need to take in order to make progress towards graduation in a timely manner, but also just even like think about the convenience things. I talk with students about like whatever the general education course is or elective, you know, some class that they're choosing that they don't have to take, right? I ask them, go through this process with them of you got to think about whatever reasoning or rationale you use to choose this class. Other students are doing the same thing. Is it the time? Is it the professor? Whatever that case might be, there's a good chance that class could be filled by the time you register. And so if you don't have like a backup or you waited, now you're left over with the classes that students actively chose not to register for. And so if you delay, you're just kind of setting yourself up for, I don't want to say an unsuccessful semester or not an even ideal semester, but not as many choices. And I think the ability to have choices and to figure out what's going to work best for you, the earlier you find out this information, you go through the steps, you get registered, the more options you're going to have. And it's just going to make the whole process better for you.
You're giving yourself the best chance to succeed. If you get in there as soon as possible, you'll have the most choice. You'll have the most opportunity. It can make whatever schedule is ideal and best for you. So it is really, really important to do that. One of the things that you mentioned is as well, Andrew, is, you know, being prepared, being ready. When you're making that plan for registration, you can make multiple plans as well. So when you actually do go to register, if you have that plan, you can attempt to sign up for it right in the moment. If you don't have a plan and you log in November 7th, 11 a.m., you're going to be taking a few minutes to manually search through and look for each course. And it might not seem like a big thing, but those few minutes, you know, the registration times come in batches, in waves. So you might not just be you at 11 a.m., it'll be another 100 students, another 200 students. And you can be pretty sure that at least a good proportion of those students are going to be registering right at that time. So if you do delay, then it's not just I'm missing out on one seat in this, one seat in that, but 10 seats are going to go, 20, mm-hmm. 30. So you really want to be as ready as possible. Talking about tips and tricks as well, you know, talked about not delaying. That also comes to having that meeting with your advisor, especially if you need that PIN. In certain semesters, you may not need a PIN, and you can check to see if you need that looking in DegreeWorks, looking in My Oswego. So you can find that information out, or even just ask your advisor, hey, do I need it this year? And they can confirm for you. But if you wait for the last second, hey, can I come and meet with you today? As for Andrew and I, you know, as professional advisors, you know, a lot of our time is directly dedicated to student meetings, but we also sit on various committees and groups. We teach. We might on any given day have a doctor's appointment. We might have, you know, a personal obligation.
A botched dentist appointment that forces you to leave the office at the end of the day.
That
the Novocaine
is
worn off.
That sounds like a story for another episode, maybe. But the point being, you know, I want to be available for you if it's, you know, 3:30 in the afternoon on a Friday, and I hope I am. But I don't want your ability to register to hinge on that as well. So we've been sending out messages for the last couple of weeks. Come in and meet with us. Come have a chat. Let's get ready to sign up for courses together. And as it gets closer and closer and closer, that becomes even more imperative. And that's not to say I won't meet with you after your time has passed. Of course I'm going to meet with you. I'm going to help you out. And if you do that, then likely as soon as we're done meeting, I'm probably going to say, okay, so now let you and I sit down together right now. Or we have our peer leaders in our office, our advisement guides, and I might say head out to one of them and they'll help you register. Or, you know, there's a waiting area outside of our office space. If you have a computer, pull it out right now. Don't wait till you get back to your room. Let's do it in this moment. But every second that passes, it just means less choice and opportunity. And I want you to take advantage of that great gift that is being able to choose your classes and taking ownership of your education. I don't want that diminished in any way. So I think that's one of my other tips maybe for this, that don't wait on those meetings. Time really is of the essence. Use a cliched phrase right here.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback off that too, not only the time of this to not delay, but as you are building your schedule and planning your schedule out, I've started to really, for this semester in particular, hone in on the number of seats to kind of set students' expectations. And my kind of threshold, David, and tell me if this is something you've noticed or, maybe you've shared this information as well, but I've started to use like the 20-seat threshold and the 35-seat threshold as like an indicator for chances of getting in a class. So what I mean by that is if we're at or below 20 seats in a class, as a first-year student especially, I wouldn't just go into that registration, process knowing that it's a good chance I'm not going to get into this class. You know, depending on the size of your program, at least the students I advise broadly speaking, there's at least 20 of them in there. So if it's a class that, there are only 20 seats in, and there's also sophomores who perhaps haven't taken the class, any juniors, lingering seniors who haven't gotten that 100, 200 level class done and out of the way yet, you might not get into it. But once we get to that 35-seat mark, as long as it's not like a general education class where you've got potentially students from all across different programs and majors able to register for it, there's probably a good chance you're going to get into it. So just know, as you're building out that schedule and you're looking at possible courses, we love small classrooms because it allows us to be more engaged, work more closely with the professor, but then also just means that it's likely to fill up more quickly than a class with 35, 90, 500 seats, large lectures, right? So that's just something to consider too. And if you, what you should then be doing is as you get closer and closer to your registration date and time, is you check back in that plan. You look to see, have those seats started to fill up? And knowing for our first year students that, again, you're the last group that registers. So if it's the day before registration and the sophomores have now started to register for classes and you see there are only one or two seats left in a class, that would be a sign for me to go back and review my plans and perhaps add a backup class, some alternative course that I can be okay taking if I don't get into that first choice or whatever other class I had selected previously.
Yeah, so know when the registration periods begin. So having an awareness of the course, the purpose, the reason, level at that, all those things are really important. So, those really super topically specific classes that are just for your major, and maybe in a minute we can talk about things like prerequisites and restrictions as well. But things that are really just for your major, you can take a look and see, do a lot of my peers at this level, do they also need to take that course? Okay, that's going to probably remove a lot. Andrew, like you said, are the upper class students who maybe haven't taken it as well, do they need to jump into that? Or is this a very broad general education course that a lot of students are going to be going for, and using that to best inform you? So in a GE class, right, that is, let's use like a Psych 100, for example, right? Psychology 100, Introduction to Psychology, very common course. A lot of students take it as part of general education or even for the major. Quite a few majors require it. If it gets down below 20 seats and it's still 2 days away from when you get to register, I can't predict the future, and maybe those seats are still available, but I would probably be advising my students at that point, hey, have that second class ready to go. And when it gets to your time, if it's available, register for it. Go for it. Take it. I want you to be excited to take that course. But if not, let's not be caught off guard. Let's have something else ready, and that's important. If it is a higher level class, right? I work with engineering students. Maybe they're going into ECE 375, a more advanced course that has multiple prerequisites, that has steps to take before you can get there. By that point in the program, the number of students who can take it, who need to take it, is much lower. I'd be less stressed with something like that if there is even maybe 10 seats left by the time you get to register. But even then, talk to your advisor and get a sense and a vibe of what the class is for and why, and that's important. The other thing that I think is important to distinguish and maybe note is what is a wait list. So sometimes when you're registering for courses, you may see, and maybe we can talk about reserve seats as well, because that can be very confusing. Yep. Sometimes when you're registering for courses, you'll see that there's 20 seats in a class, and there's 10 waitlist seats. First of all, not every class has a waitlist. So I've had students ask me before, what can I get onto the waitlist? So that depends if there is one. If all the seats are gone in a class, you have the option, instead of being able to directly register for the course, to be added onto the waitlist instead. And if you put your name on the waitlist, you aren't registered in the course yet. That's very important to know. If someone later decides to step out of that class, they change classes, maybe they no longer are eligible to take that course for a reason, the waitlist then becomes active. And whoever has registered for that waitlist first is in basically first come, first serve order. They then have a window. They're notified that a seat has become available. They're notified they have a window to register for that course. And if they don't register for that course in that window, it then becomes available to the next person, and so on and so forth until it is filled or until the waitlist is exhausted, and then it becomes broadly available again. So if you go onto that waitlist, it's a good opportunity. You also don't want to bank that you're going to get the seat, and you need to look at how many people are on that waitlist. I'll use the example, as I said earlier, sign language, very popular course. Sometimes when it gets to my students, I'll see that there's 15 people on the waitlist before them. And I'll share with my advisees, hey, if you want that course, go ahead and put your name to the waitlist. But I want to be very honest with you. I would not anticipate that you're probably going to get that this semester. So let's talk about, do we want to take a different language? Or if you're really excited for that, let's map out your schedule. And do you have time to still complete that? Or, I see this is actually being offered at an institution nearby you, a community college. Maybe we can transfer that in. And that's a chance for you to still take that on the timeline that you want it. The other thing that you might see when you're registering for courses are unreserved seats and reserved seats. And this is important because it can cause confusion. Well, why couldn't I get into the class? I still see seats available. If something is unreserved, then the class is generally available to be registered for so long as you meet restrictions and prerequisites. Restrictions being, are you the right class year if it has a class year restriction? Are you the right major or minor if it has a restriction on that? And sometimes even a cohort restriction. You need to be a part of a certain group on campus to be into the class. But if it's unreserved, seats are available, you meet all prerequisites and restrictions, you can sign up for it. If seats are reserved, those seats are being held on to for a certain reason, for a certain group of students.
A special VIP that paid more money, David, or?
Well, where am I paying for? I mean, man, I wish I knew about that back in the day.
No, they're not VIP seats, right? That's the point. These are not special reserve seats set aside for some special student that did something extra. No, it's for our incoming students, the next batch.
Incoming students. Or another common one, too, is that in the case of certain online courses, we might have seats reserved for our students who are in fully online programs because we want to make sure they have an opportunity, right, to take those classes and they're not boxed out of those courses just because they have a later time. If a seat is reserved, even if it says 10 seats left in the class, if those are reserved seats, at least immediately you can't get into those classes. If those reserved seats are still unfilled by a certain point, and I don't want to throw it in just because I don't know exactly when it is for this coming semester, but if they're still unfilled by the point at which that reserve period ends, then you may be able to register for them. But it's important to know what seats are actually available. That'll save you the trouble and the stress of, oh no, why couldn't I get into something? My whole plan hinged on this. So being well informed is important.
Well, and David, I'm glad that you brought this up because this is something in my registration workshops with my advisees. I really wanted to try to hammer home. I even said we're going to do this like we're in a cult and we're going to say the chant out loud. Before you ever add a class, you need to read the description, the restrictions, and the prerequisites. Say it with me, everyone. The description, the restrictions, and the prerequisites. One more time. The description, man. The restrictions, and prerequisites.
I'm a little bit worried about what you're doing there, the cult of Andrew.
But it's so important because every section is different. You could have a section that's restricted to just students in the major. You could have a section that has the reserve seats and another section that does not. So you have to check these items to ensure every time before you add that class, is this something that I can actually take?
A good example, actually, I'm going to shout out our ACE program, which is a fantastic cohort group to support our students from first year all the way to senior year. They have a nice program going where they work with some of our English instructors, right, to have some English courses that are set aside for their students, so you can collectively have ACE students in class together, which is really, really cool. if you don't look at those restrictions first on registration day, you might say, hey, I'm adding my English 102 general education course, but I didn't look at the restrictions. I go to sign up for that, and now it's saying over and over again, I can't register, restriction, cohort restriction. I can't get into it. And you're banging your head against the wall. If you had taken 2 minutes to do that, you could have planned for another course. Mm-hmm. But now, because you accidentally tried to sign up for something you couldn't do, and you're registering at the same time as 100 other people, 5 more sections of English 102 are now gone. So checking those is so important.
And again, that's why I go back to the cultish mentality. We have to say this over and over again until it's ingrained in our brains.
So I think one of the other really important things to talk about also is, you know, when you're looking at classes, a lot of decisions go into what classes to take. And what I mean by that is that you might see 10 sections of English 102, right? So it's not just I need to take the course, but you might want to consider, you know, what time of day is it? You know, you now have the advantage in hindsight of having a whole semester of classes behind you, hopefully when you're listening to this, or half a semester, but you'll have knowledge. Maybe that 8 a.m. that you were really ambitious for before, you're realizing I really have trouble getting up for. So I'm gonna intentionally look for classes later. Hopefully I get them, right? But look for later classes. I realized that even though I thought having an online course would give me a lot of flexibility, that it's hard to keep myself motivated. So maybe I'm going to try to look for more in-person courses or vice versa. I know that I have a lot of back-to-back courses and I'm an athlete, and having an online course would give me more flexibility to fit my practice times in as well. I want you to even think about the courses not just in isolation, but in totality, right? So I work with a lot of STEM majors, right? And if I see them adding on their first math class and their second math class and then a science class with a lab and then some other studio-based course, I might say to them, okay, are you thinking about maybe throwing a general education class in there as well? And even if you're excited about these, consider the rigor. And all of our courses, you know, are going to be rigorous and engaged, but consider the time and investment, the troubleshooting you're going to do, the revisions you're going to make, and making sure you're balancing courses out. So you maybe have some that are more writing, some that are more testing, some that are more theory, some that are more studio lab type courses as well. But having that variety helps you to not be so burned out when you're working on things as well, and helps you to maybe to really do your best work as much as you can. So really look at the courses in totality. The last thing I'll mention, and I pause to even say these words out loud. Be cautious, please, with using things like Rate My Professor. Online tools that say they can give you insight into how that instructor might teach, the quality, you're going to get something called voluntary response bias, right? This isn't a podcast on things like psychology or communication strategies, whatever this would fall under there. But those who go on to and provide feedback tend to be, and this isn't catch-all, but tends to be either those who had a really, really great experience and they want to praise that person, or someone who had a negative experience. And that can be a real negative experience, or it can be a manifested negative experience as well. You don't see as many down the middle, unbiased responses by the nature of we're human beings, right? So we end up developing biases through our experiences there. So be very cautious, take it with a very large grain of salt if you look at that. And I would discourage you personally from looking at that. When students ask me, you know, my recommendations, I said, well, reach out to the instructor, you know, maybe have a conversation with them, visit their office hours and talk to them about their passions, their interests and courses, and get a sense of what is that communication style like? And is there a methodology of teaching the course? Does that align with how you're excited to learn this course as well? You can seek out good advice from peers in your program directly as well, who you trust, you know, and engage with. You know, and of course, different ways of teaching are going to be different for each student, and some might click more with one way than the other. But just be cautious. If you look for outside information, look at it critically, and I would really encourage you not to prejudge, because each person's experience is going to be very different.
I use the same thing with even just talking to your friends and peers about any other type of requirement or thing on campus where, like, yes, their information, it can be helpful sometimes, sure, but it can also be harmful. It can generally do harm to your progress towards graduation. The number of times I've had a student, you know, sit down with me, oh, my roommate said this information. Great. I'm glad your roommate
is your roommate an advisor?
Yeah. Does your roommate get paid the big bucks to make sure that, you know, you're registering for the appropriate classes? No. So, like, it's you got to take that all with a grain of salt. That's the way I get. Like, it's inevitable. You're going to look at these things. You're going to talk to your peers about what professors and that how they were and all of that. But you really need to look at things big picture. I also want to tie back something to David to and not to get off this point, because I think it's very important to bring this up.
Let's go in a different direction here.
But to something on a lighter note is you also want to think about your life as it relates to your schedule.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know how you brought up the 8 a.m. class, like maybe you were ambitious, but now you're realizing it's going to be a struggle for me to get up in the morning. There are other things to consider, too, like eating throughout the day. I would hope that if for our first year students, your advisor, you know, took the time to make sure that like you had the ability to get food at some point. But I've had students, you know, sit down with me and show a schedule of classes where it's like they have courses all throughout the times when the dining halls are open. In high school, you probably just had, you know, a lunch period that was automatically built in your schedule. In college, that doesn't exist. If you want to get food, you have to kind of get food when things are open. So build your schedule in such a way that, you know, you can stop for at the dining hall to get lunch. If you have a work schedule, you know, it's a balance. You have to figure out, okay, you know, how much money can I bring in to be able to afford college, but also not take away from my ability to be the best student I can be. So make sure you're planning your schedule around those life things. If you're a caretaker, you have to, you know, I got to make sure I get my child to daycare at a certain time. Those are very important and real world things that have to be factored into this class schedule.
Even when we're going now, we're recording this in the fall, we're going into the winter, right? Commuting time, right? If you are a commuter who's traveling in, right? Winter time, spring semester. I always found that a little bit of a misnomer, spring semester.
Yes. When most nothing of it, spring about it.
not for a while, at least. You know, you might need to bank in a little extra time in the morning if the roads are wet and slippery, as they often are here on the shores of Lake Ontario. But even for a student who lives right on campus, right? If you live in Oneida, you live in Cayuga, and you have a class over in Rich, it's going to be a little bit, more sloppy, a little wetter out during the winter time, and you're going to maybe want to bank in 5 extra minutes to get somewhere so that you're not slipping and falling. So all those things, like the life circumstances, very important point, Andrew.
And I remember the comment I was going to make earlier about registration as you're building out that plan of classes. There's an overlooked column, I think, on registration that students definitely need to be mindful of, and that's the campus. So we offer classes online, and it's fairly obvious when you look at an online class to see it's online. It doesn't have the days and times filled in. It kind of gives, it says no face-to-face on there. But we do offer classes at our Syracuse campus, and I don't know how often you run into this, David, but at least one student every semester registers for a Syracuse campus class, and then I look at their schedule and I go, oh, well, you do realize you have 15 minutes to get down to Syracuse, and it takes you about 50 to 60, so that's not going to work out for you. So you got to make sure, like, you got to check all of the things to be sure that you're eligible to take that class, or it makes sense for you to take the class.
Great point. Hey, shout out to our Syracuse campus. It's a beautiful venue they have down there. You know, and if that works with your schedule, with your needs, you're in that location, or just even within the time frame, definitely check it out. It's kind of a hidden gem of a unique opportunity. But yeah, even if you're an in-person class and then you're switching to an online class, right? Some of those are asynchronous courses where you're logging in, you're completing work based on as the instructor loads in the schedule they set. Some online classes are synchronous, though, and you might be hopping into a Google Meet, into a Zoom, into some other video platform. Do you have time between your classes to get to wherever you need to open up your computer, to find a quiet space where you can focus? So just having that awareness of the timing of the day, I think, is really, really important, Andrew. So that's a great tip that you brought up as well. So one last thing I want to, I think, talk about today. We can always ramble back if we need to, if we're missing something else. But, Andrew, what happens if I don't get into that class that I want? If my plan didn't work out, I really, really wanted to take, I'm going to look at you, and hopefully I'm not making a fool of myself right now, Comp 212, and the class is completely filled, and it's going to completely derail my prerequisites, my schedules, my requirements. Help, what do I do in a moment like that?
So number one is you don't panic, right? It's the nature, especially for our first-year students being the last group that goes, something like this is inevitable. So number one, don't panic. Step number two, this is where your advisor can come in and help. So book an appointment with us, even come to the Advisement Center if you're a SUNY Oswego student, right? We have drop-in hours 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Come sit down, talk to an advisor, figure out, okay, if I couldn't get into this class, what are my other options? From there, really depends on the nuance of this, the situation, whatever the specific circumstances are, the program, the student, et cetera. But sometimes there are things that we can do. Like, for example, if a class actually has capacity, sometimes we can reach out to the instructor and to see, hey, can we get added to this class beyond the seating capacity? Sometimes it could be just a matter of, you know, typically the class has more students in it, but the room that they had to be switched to, you know, there are logistics that factor into this that we don't often consider.
Might be physical seats in the room, might be fire code, but you can always ask.
Yes.
See, I'm looking into
so,
it.
So, you know, it's worth looking into. As you get closer and closer to graduation, it could be the case that you have to do what's called a program deviation, and that's with you work with your advisor in the department. In the case that a class can't be completed, you're going to deviate and take something else, a different course to satisfy that same requirement. And that's like in the, I don't want to say the worst case scenario, but you know, that's a very special circumstance. The other thing too is get registered for as many classes as you can, and then know that your schedule is not truly finalized until the second or third week of the semester anyways. So we've got more time to figure out those last pieces. So if you get 3 out of the 5 classes, great. Let's work to perhaps find what I like to say are 2 placeholder classes, things that I will be okay with taking if I don't get into my preferred or more idealized choices. But we've got the next several months to figure it out. And what will happen is inevitably students will make changes to their schedule. They will decide to switch majors. There will be students who don't get to return because of their academic standing. There will be students who decide to leave campus for whatever reason and not come back the following semester. Sometimes we make changes to the number of seats where we realize, oh, there is a demand. We need more seats in a certain section. We'll work with departments to see if we can get more seats added or more sections. So all that's to say is it's a work in progress. You have the next several months, weeks ahead of you to finalize that schedule. And even at that point, I don't think your schedule is quite done yet, because I'm going to encourage, and I tell my advisors this, that first week of classes is a chance to reevaluate things. You might have thought that that class that you were really excited about is not what you thought it was. And so now you're going to want to make a change to your schedule, and that's like a cascading effect. It will cause you now to switch to a different class, and you could end up with a completely different looking schedule than when you started. So we got more time to figure this out.
Well, and let's come full circle here for a minute with the start of this conversation. Maybe end of the semester and one of those midterm grades that you initially had, maybe it didn't work out and you're no longer eligible for a course you registered for. You might be making changes, or you were kind of hedging a little bit and you decided not to register for a more advanced course because you didn't think you were going to do really well in a class. And all of a sudden you actually do succeed and you pass this flying colors. You pick up the pace in the second semester. You might make an adjustment and add on that last class. So considering your current grades, considering your trajectory, everything you're taking, talk to your advisor about those things. The last thing that I encourage my advisees to do, and I want to be intentionally vague here because this isn't my area of specialty, but I at least know enough to mention it, is that after you register for courses in My Oswego, you have the option to take a look at how courses affect things like your financial aid eligibility as well. Every course that you take has some type of impact on your degree advancement, on completing your program and whatnot, whether it is for your major, general education, or towards your overall total credit hour count getting up to graduation. After you register for courses, the My Oswego system and all the tools that interact together will basically run an audit for you and tell you, is a class eligible for aid at varying types, federal, state, what have you, or is it not eligible? And review that, take a look at it, so that in a couple of weeks and a couple of months, when you then have that bill generated, you're informed of how is that going to be impacted. And if you have questions on the cost, on the bill, on the aid, use your resources. So talk to your advisor to check to see, is this a course that is going to help complete a degree requirement for me? Talk to our financial aid office, who do great work and can really help students out with their aid packages. Talk to our student accounts office to understand your bill and your charges as well. But I think maybe the word of the day, if I'm going to keep going back to it, is being informed, right? Making informed decisions, being aware of what your situation is. And you can use that now so that you don't have any panic moments later on.
Oh, and I'm glad you added that tag at the end there. Don't panic, because this is not a perfect system either. It's actually very complicated to figure out this information of what counts and what doesn't count. It's not as black and white as we'd like it to be in some cases. There's a little bit of feedback required in some cases from an advisor to confirm that, yes, this class is required for the degree program. So when you see that, oh, this class is not financial aid eligible, don't panic. You know what to do. I'm going to go talk to my advisor about this. The advisor will take a look. Your advisor might say, yep, you need to go talk to financial aid about this. But it's to be informed and don't panic for sure.
So as we always get to the end of each episode, at least one of my favorite points is asking a random question or something completely unrelated to engage, connect, to have a personal element. And Andrew, this week we are in Halloween week. This Friday, the ghouls and goblins will be out, the costumes, the candy will flow. So my question to you, and I'll give you a minute to think about it because I have an answer already ready, unless it comes immediately to mind. What is your favorite Halloween costume that you've ever worn?
Ooh, favorite Halloween costume I've ever worn. Oh, boy. I have to defer to you, David, right, to hear your answer.
I'm ready with my answer. So back when I think it was my first year in college, I dressed as Quail Man from Doug. I don't know if you ever watched the Doug show, but Doug Funny, it was an old animated show. And Quail Man was his superhero alter ego. So he would have a green sweater vest, a pair of khaki shorts. He wore a belt on his head, kind of leaning over. He had a giant letter Q on that, complete with a theme song and everything, fighting crime and everything. So Quail Man, highly creative on my part and a nod to my childhood.
Nice. I'm trying to think of what my favorite. I'll be fairly predictable here. I have a kind of Jedi costume that I wear pretty regularly, but it's my favorite because it's very, I think, like, obvious to what I'm trying to portray through the costume. Quail Man is probably for a millennial. Yeah, we know that if we watch Nickelodeon. This generation, they probably would not get that reference. But Star Wars is timeless. It kind of exists no matter where you are, if you were born in the 70s or if you were born in the late 2000s. You see that classic brown robe with the hood and just being a big Star Wars fan. I like to wear that costume. So I continue to wear it, and I will probably be wearing it to the office this Friday as well.
So just because you say that, Andrew, how about you give a plug as well for a course you're teaching next semester in case students are interested in registering for it?
Yeah, and if anyone is interested in Star Wars, I am once again teaching GST 198, but now I'm teaching in the spring semester as well, which still means it's only going to be available to first-year students as a signature course, so whether you're first semester or second semester freshman. If you are a sophomore by credit hour standing, but you are technically a first year student, you can take the class. We'll just have to do the override to get you in it. But Tuesday, Thursday, 3:55 to 5:15, talking life lessons from a galaxy far, far away. I think it's a great class personally, but I'm also the guy that developed it and who teaches it. So, don't take my word for it. Ask some of your peers who might be in the class.
I've been privy to one of your tests before, and they're serious. Not to scare anyone off, but you really go into it and you really teach a lot too. So it's not just watching the movies. It's not just talking about the characters. But you really learn a lot of good lessons, information. It's a very intellectual course, and I think it's exciting.
Well, and I'll say that to, like, let's put a nice cap on all of this, David.
Let's wrap it up.
Because it's tying back to registration. You mentioned reaching out to the instructor to ask about their classes, looking at that description to get a sense of it. Don't just take our word for it here. Talk to the professors. Talk to people about these classes. Try something out.
Yes.
That, you think, man, I don't know if this was going to interest me or not, but no matter what it is, you're not going to know until you do it. So try it out. See what it's like. And if it doesn't work for you, we can make a change to your schedule.
And I think that's fantastic ending advice. Well, Andrew, thanks again for another great episode. For all of you listening as well, we appreciate your time and energy. I'm not a big social media person. What is it? Do we like it? Do we subscribe it? Do we click a button?
Whatever medium you're listening to this on, platform, there's some probably button for to either give a review, a thumbs up, a like, but please do that if you're listening to Apple. I know that really helps too with the like algorithm of getting it out there, is leaving a comment, a 5-star review, anything. I don't know if I have an email address attached to it, but you can find our contact information. We would love to hear feedback from you if you enjoy listening to us. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone.